Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. You know, that small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, though, I want to mention our monthly guidebook workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. And if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit the subscribe link in the header menu, and you'll be good to go. All right. We are here with Josh Meter, and Josh is a really, really amazing young, talented guitarist. And, you know, we've checked him out on YouTube, and I'm assuming you probably have, and if you haven't, you definitely should, man. And we want to get to know a little more about, like, what he's up to and try to ask some different questions than he's been asked in the past. And, you know, let's first start with, how are you dealing with quarantine and how bad is it there? I know I have a couple friends in Australia. My friend Will Vinson and
He lives there.
And his wife Jo, you know, who played with Sting.
Yeah.
You know, they're right in, I think it's Adelaide though, so I don't know how close that is to you.
Pretty sure they're Adelaide, yeah. And that's I don't even know, man. It's like a couple of hours flight.
Right.
Wise. But I'm playing with Will actually.
Nice.
In a few months, I think, for the Sydney kind of con international jazz festival. I'm doing like a big band thing with him.
That's great, man.
It's going to be cool.
He is not
it's
only
a big band with you two.
he's not only like, you know, obviously an amazing alto player, but he's a really sweet guy and super cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it seems like it for sure. Yeah.
Who else is in the group?
It's actually, it's kind of like an under 25 group.
Except for Will.
Year old group. Except for Will, yeah. Will's like, yeah, precisely. He's guesting with us. And, you know, we're doing his tunes and stuff. I think they've been arranged by a couple of big composers and arrangers for big bands.
Yeah, he told me about that. He was writing all this stuff. Yeah. That's so cool, man.
Yeah, it must be same thing.
Yes. I hope it didn't blow up his spot. Maybe he was using like a fake ID or something.
No, he wrote the tunes. He was telling me that he got commissioned to do this thing, you know what I mean, and he's writing all these arrangements and songs for this performance, and but anyway, you'll have a blast. He's amazing.
Should be grateful.
So aren't you 25 now?
I'm 24 now.
Oh wow. Nice. So cool. You're not quite old yet, right?
No.
Yeah.
Right on. 25 is when it all goes downhill.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, don't do the Hendrix thing, right?
Yeah.
So you have been, I know that COVID has pretty much, you know, dried up everything here. I was talking to Will the other day, and, you know, he, on the podcast, we actually had him too. He said that, they had a bit of a quarantine at a point, but I know Adelaide's not Sydney, you know what I mean? It's further out. But it was nothing compared to how we dealt with it, like the shitstorm that we had here.
No. Yeah, Australia's actually done super well, I think, in general. Now it's pretty much non-existent here in Sydney.
Right.
Like everything's back open. Gigs are full capacity again, I'm pretty sure.
For sure.
No masks on public transport either. It's everything's kind of back to normal. I was out with my friends the other night, and it was dancing was back and like full capacity at venues, and
man,
yeah, it was pretty much normal again, which is awesome. So it's been like a year since that has happened, which is probably a long time off for you guys,
man.
Still,
yes,
for all of that.
Spike, who owns Smalls, you know, he's grappling with it, you know, and so is my friends at Smoke, who own, you know, the jazz club uptown, and Yeah, the New York clubs are still at minor capacity and they're having trouble. But
they're
yeah,
killing up the live stream game, though. They really are doing a great job.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. But I can't go to those clubs. I'm way the hell out here.
Well, you're in LA, but there's other stuff there. Well, so the Blue Whale closed, which is a drag.
Yeah.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
That sucks.
So have you ever been over here? I know that your dad was a bass player, right? And, you know, and you're obviously, you were from the Netherlands originally, or is that true? Or
yeah, I was just born there. My parents, you know, have no ties through family over there, but they moved over there for work and gigs and stuff. And my dad was in a successful European gypsy jazz band over there. So Amsterdam is just a good place to connect everything in.
Totally.
I was born there and then moved to Australia when I was 11.
And you were really into, you know, the gypsy jazz thing. Where I mean, I know that you were into Django and Borelli, right? Because that's kind of like, Borelli kind of went, you know, to the next stage, you know, in the Jaco era, for sure.
I think so.
I see the paintings behind you. Plus, that guitar looks like, you have a guitar just like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're my mom. So my mom did a bunch of kind of illustrations. She's a visual artist.
Oh, man.
A bunch of illustrations for my dad's. He had like a book series, one of the first like gypsy jazz book series that he put out. And yeah, those were the covers for them. Just man, books.
What is with the small like sound hole thing in that guitar culture?
I'm not sure,
just,
man. I mean,
it's just cool looking. But
yeah, it does look cool. And there's two, like there's the D hole, which is obviously a lot bigger than that tiny one. Yeah, I don't know. I always thought the D hole was more for rhythm stuff and then the small one was for lead, but I don't know if that's actually true or not.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sticking with that. I like that one.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe the small hole like projects the sound in one direction rather than big hole is more stereo, maybe for rhythm. I don't know. That kind of makes sense, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about Django the other day, and he's one of those guitarists, and I'm a bass player by nature. I play guitar, but you know, my livelihood was always as bass in New York and stuff, and then I was writing for television and doing other things. But regardless, as a guitar fan, you know, I mean, Django is one of those guys that, you know, you can emulate, you know, and but there's something about him that was, it just came out of nowhere. And he dropped out of a cloud, and I feel, and still with limited fingers, he could do things that were it's still very, very hard for people with all their fingers to do.
Exactly.
And then you get, you know, and we were talking, Jake, was it, who else were we talking to? Holdsworth, you know what I mean? Just like, where did that come from? You know what I mean? Like no one sounded like that before him. And, you know, so from what I know about you, like I've seen some of your transcription work and some of your videos, and you sound amazing. And I know for YouTube and for all that stuff, you want to do things that resonate with people. So you know, transcriptions and stuff like that. It's definitely a great way to get in. Like, what are you doing now? I believe you have a quartet, or are you going to be recording something, or you know?
Definitely, man. Yeah, that's all. In the future for sure. I'm hopefully going to try and record this year. It's kind of gone down to a trio now, with kind of the piano player doing kind of synthy bass stuff, or just, you know, bass as well, which sounds pretty cool. Trio kind of vibe, I guess, similar to like what Chris Potter's been doing recently with like Eric Harland and James.
Sure.
Like the trio, but with synth and synth bass kind of at the same time.
Yep.
Which is, something I really like. So just writing tunes at the moment and then doing gigs here and there to try and rehearse it up and rehearsals. And maybe July, we're going to try and record. We'll just have to suss it out. But yeah, it's going
to
be good.
Do you have any plans to ever come to the States and do anything like that? Or are you 100%. Just want to hang?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as soon as kind of the world opens back up again, then.
Yeah, don't come here.
Be traveling as as soon as it all happens.
Yeah, I think you'd have a great, you know, time in New York for sure. You know, I've lived in both Los Angeles and New York, and LA is great too. You know, but in terms of New York, it's like you just run into people on the train or at gigs.
That's
like
awesome.
After your gig, you go to the other spot and you check out the last set of so and so, and it's a nice hang. You know, and.
Cool.
I'm assuming sure. that there's some of that in Sydney. It's a big city. But like, what is the community like there, talking to me, which I don't know much about the music scene there?
Yeah, it's pretty good, man. Unfortunately, we had like one of our main jazz clubs closed down. They fully shut down like a couple months ago, I think now.
Because of this.
That was a bummer. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, it was kind of on a downhill trend anyway, but then when COVID hit, actually the owner, Cameron Undy, I don't know if you know him.
I know his name.
Bass player. Yeah. Bass player in Sydney, yeah. He owned it and Venue 505. And he actually, I think he left 1 month before COVID hit.
Oh, wow.
Which was super lucky. So he just got out right at the right chance and then like started up a smaller venue, which is what eventually shut, I think, maybe a month ago or something. So that's a bummer. There's still two main jazz clubs here, mm-hmm. One Foundry 616 and Lazy Bones Lounge, which are both really cool. So they're definitely the hangs. And, right. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I know you could definitely pack in Bird's Basement in Melbourne.
Yes.
But I think they're temporarily closed right now, I think. So I wonder if they're...
Right.
Yeah. I love that place. I played there for like a week.
Oh, awesome. That's
they're
cool.
They just love music, man. They treat people right. Yeah. I wish the States were like that.
Yeah. I think I played there once with a big band as well.
Nice.
So if you're to come to New York, are you going to... Do you want to like set your roots down or in the States and kind of just, you know?
I mean, that'd be cool for sure. I don't think I would want to go like study anymore out of school.
Right. You went to college,
I mean,
right?
It would be like doing a master's. Yeah. I've already done like a bachelor in honors as well. Mm-hmm. So it'd be, finding a way to get over there without having to study maybe. But yeah, it'd be awesome to spend like a couple months just going through all the different gigs and,
yeah,
you know, seeing how it all is.
Yeah, right. And you know, it should be easier to get a visa or any kind of thing going on now that we don't have the orange guy as president. So you know,
true.
Yeah, he was not happening.
but
yeah, I mean, in terms of, and I know Jake had a lot to ask about this. I mean, you were kind of gifted. A father who was serious about music. He's a professional, and did he teach you like how to practice, or did you just kind of pick it up? Because I guess it's like the drive and the motivation and the determination to do a set amount of hours every day. Like I know you did that from a young age, and so how did that happen?
Yeah, he definitely showed me how to practice, and he would practice with me every day until I was 12, 13. Mm-hmm. So he'd wake up with me in the mornings before school and we'd do like an hour and a half together, just going through different exercises and maybe learn a song or something. Like he'd stay up the night before figuring out maybe like a Steve Vai thing and then he'd show it to me in the morning or that kind of stuff. And, or Joe Satriani's song, he'd get like part by part and we'd learn the whole thing over a week or two or something. And I reckon it gave me heaps of just thoughts about practice that I later on, like after 13, when I kind of stopped having lessons with him every morning, we'd still play together, but it was all songs and I kind of went off on my own and practice and learned how to do stuff at that point. Mm-hmm. Mainly through like transcribing and just checking out other people's licks or videos online. He just gave me so much as far as how to practice and what it kind of took, how many hours it would take. And
did you ever have, you know, the rebellion and try to like just go out and not care? Like you must have enjoyed it to a certain extent. Like I grew up with piano and no one in my family really understands music. I used to win like practice awards when I was like six, but I never practiced. So it's like, You know, if you have a certain ear, you can get away with a lot.
Yeah.
But like, as soon as I, you know, wanted to be cool in school, like all that stuff went out the window and all my discipline went away. So I just wonder, you know, did you ever struggle with any of that? Like, that's crazy. No, it's hard.
Yeah, not really at all, to be honest. Like, I think because I was just singularly focused on trying to be like the best before a certain age. Like, I think I had an idea, whereas as soon as I left high school, I would just lose a huge amount of time to practice. So during high school, I just wanted to cram everything I could into those hours and learn as much as possible. I mean, at one point, I think maybe 14, 15, for 6 months or something, I would get up like at 4 in the morning and try and get like 3 to 4 hours in before I had to leave for school. And that only lasted a couple months. Yeah, just 6 months maybe. But
do you think that's teachable? Like, because
I don't know.
What you're describing is more of a talent than being able to just play an instrument easily. Because like that stuff just gets you to a certain point. If you don't have the discipline after that, nothing matters. So to me, like, that's the true talent, is like becoming self-disciplined. And I actually put like a quote today because I knew I was going to be talking to you. So on our Instagram, I put an Aristotle like discipline quote. But
I think so. It probably can't be taught. I think maybe I was always, because my dad was, you know, teaching me from a young age, I guess maybe I had that already in my, that's just the way I thought. And, you know, I always had the idea that to be able to make it doing what I love doing, which is music, that I had to be kind of the best at it, because it's so hard to make a living from it, which my dad always told me. And
those are super mature real thoughts, honest. Though.
Yeah, for that. That's important to learn.
That's like, you know, the only person I could think of that has that same discipline, and it's because of a father figure, is Julian Coryell.
All right.
Yeah, but for him, his father was a guitar player. So I think, remember Adam, I think he said he played bass.
He didn't want to fuck with the guitar because it was too much competition.
It's just like, you know? No. That's good.
And you know, I think another thing was like, I'd hear, one of the biggest motivating things was like hearing old clips of, you know, my favorite guitarists like Borelli or those guys, like they have those videos on YouTube where they're 13 years old or something, right. Or even Jimmy Rosenberg. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, like I need to be doing a lot better than I'm doing at 13.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope.
It's just a big kick in the butt when you see someone that young crush it. And now there's like, I feel like guys on Instagram these days, there's some young kids that I don't understand how they're that good at that age.
That's what I look at
It's crazy. Oh, thank you.
No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, but there is a divide between, you know, what someone can do on an Instagram video and what they can do on stage and their voice and how they develop. And ultimately, that's what's going to be the most important thing about any young player, you know. It's hard to say. I've seen other younger phenoms at 16 or 17 either burn out or decide they didn't want to go into music because it requires a lot more than talent. Like when you actually start gigging and paying your bills from it, it's like you have to be hard in your head. You know, you have to be mentally tough.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, another thing my dad was always told me was, you know, you have to figure out a way to turn it into some kind of money as well, money thing, like, because obviously that's a real life factor, and you know, you can't just play and not worry about that kind of stuff. So you know, from younger age, like me and my sister would be with my dad and we'd go busking like as trios, or me and my dad would do a duo thing because that was the only way you could make money, I guess, at a young age playing music. Every weekend we'd go down and to the, you know, Circular Quay, which, you know, has the harbour and stuff, and we'd play, you know, up to maybe 6 hours Saturday and Sunday. Which was awesome.
Yeah.
And those are incredible practice too.
Yeah. That's what I was gonna say. Like I saw one clip and like I think you were probably 16, 15. Yeah. But like you were already forming ideas of like fusion. Of like a Scott Anderson, of like blues lines mixed in with like, you know, you can tell you transcribe the language, like you know how stuff fits rhythmically too, because rhythmically is like, that's usually the thing that people fumble on, is they're putting out notes on like wrong beats, and you know what I mean? Like,
definitely.
So you already had that shit like together.
Yeah, I was trying to.
Yeah.
But I look back at
from
those
playing. Like that's what it gives you. It gives you all that stuff.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think there's like, you actually need to practice in front of an audience, like improvising. That has to form like a lot of practice, I reckon, because you can't replicate that in the room. So I was very fortunate that my dad was willing to come out with me and basically just play rhythm nonstop and teach me these cool tunes for me to just kind of blow on and practice playing the melodies too. And
I mean, it sounds silly, but you have to open up your nervous system, like literally, because it's a different system of confidence between just like being in the comfort of something and then playing, like you literally, you could freeze up. Like it's just,
and I think that's what I was saying with the Instagram thing is like, there's a certain batch of players that can, you know, take 10 takes of a tune and that's their comfort zone because there's no one watching, but it's hard when you're on stage. I mean, you know, when you're in front of a big audience, like sometimes your hands are a little cold, you know, and it's, or it just doesn't seem as personal, you know. I mean, you know, it's different, but you know, some people thrive from it, and you know, and I think that the what I was saying before too is, and what you just said about, you know, adapting these ideas, I think it's an important thought, and it's an important thing for other people to understand that. Like, for instance, you do a lot of transcription work, and from what I know and I read, you transcribe almost every day or every day, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, not so much anymore, but you did for a long time,
Right, but, you know, transcribing is, it's one of the best things you can do, right? I mean, it's great for your ears, it's
Yeah.
At the same time, like, if you're not integrating some of that, either phrases that you like or trying to enter it into your playing or even like articulation or whatever it is, eventually you won't be gaining your own voice, right? You won't be able to actually, you know, you don't want to regurgitate someone else's solo when you're playing, right? So so what has helped you most with in this process? I mean, especially with, you know, this lockdown and not being able to, you know, play as much with humans, I mean, kind of developing your own thing. Like when you practice, do you, I guess this is a long question, but when you're practicing, are you ever just, you know, freeing yourself up to create something at this point? Like what is your practice now?
So it's very much in that area. Like I don't do much, technical work anymore, and I haven't done for the past few years,
which has been
cool to haven't had to worry about that. It's kind of usually there for me as soon as I pick up the instrument.
Right, but you did years of technical work, right? I mean,
exactly. Right, yeah.
Like that,
and that's
like,
kind of why I did it, because I knew eventually I don't want to sit there and do 3 hours of maintenance practice every day to try and keep the same level of technique. So, So now it's, you know, the transcription thing I really love doing, and, you know, sometimes I definitely think I should be doing a little bit more. But, you know, I'll usually just get a line that really sticks out to me from someone and learn it. And then I guess my process is just playing it in all the positions, every key, and then trying to figure out how I can integrate my regular, you know, subconscious phrases that I don't even have to think about that come out of my hands or my ears, I guess. That stuff, I'm trying to figure out how I can integrate that with the line. Almost here, like, you know, you have two sides. That's all your regular subconscious vocabulary that you don't think about much. And here's the new piece, figuring out ways to connect those two and get this more to that side, which can take months.
Like, yeah. But you're putting it in your DNA. It's like you're making it part of your strand, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe like what comes out of a line is literally just a small little fingering pattern between three fingers that will connect to a new phrase. And that's all you get from this big, long Michael Brecker line or something. But then it's still worth it because, you know, you get a little bit of something from everything you transcribe. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't consciously aware of it, which is a cool thing. I think it's the biggest thing I tell like people that come to me for lessons. Like if you can be transcribing one line a day, you know, you're going to be at such a higher level within, you know, it doesn't take very long for all that stuff to amass pretty quickly. As long as you're analyzing it, obviously. But
you do that with the English language and you'll be blown away at what you can, it's exactly what you're the saying same. After, you know, like a year.
Yeah.
Damn.
I could use the exact same that too. Yeah. I mean, you're right. And a lot of the times it's, their cells, you know? I mean, I think Chad Lefkowitz Brown did a video and it was kind of like on the Brecker subject. He's, you know, tenor player and he called them melodic cells, you know, meaning that if you can find the meaning of, for instance, what Brecker did, sometimes you can find a pattern in it, you know, like it's like fourth something, second, you know, nine, you know, or whatever, and then up, up, down, or whatever it is. And you could at least figure out what he was thinking, you know, which is always helpful, you know, to form your own ideas.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't even matter what explanation you come up with in a way.
Yeah.
Because if you've come up with an explanation, you've actually done the job and you've looked at it in enough detail to even find a pattern to begin with. So, and once you have your own pattern, maybe that's even like what guys like Django and Al Holdsworth were doing. They weren't thinking of other people's ways to explain things. They were purely just looking at everything through their own lens, and maybe from the very beginning as well, how they developed such a unique voice or something. I mean, when you look at like Alan's way of looking at the fretboard, even on those old videos of everything spread out like that. Like it seems like pretty unique thoughts for that.
Yeah, plus he would just climb too. Like you could just watch him go up the neck. Like it's just like how the hell
had
that thing covered.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You ever get into any breathing exercises? Like my teacher Jim Robitaille is big into that. Like he has like a meditative breathing thing, and you could see him when he's playing. Because I know like physically, you know, you could fly on that thing. But like, you know, you got to keep your body relaxed, and that's a big challenge for people. But
I had I think, you know, I've never paid too much attention to my breath, but I did have a lesson with Rainier Bass when he was in Sydney. You know him, one of my favorite players, and he kind of noted, he was like, seems like you almost stop breathing when you play a phrase sometimes.
Yeah, a big run.
A big run. Yeah, it's almost like just a, even though it's like not helping your body at all.
It's like a Hollywood blockbuster. I know. You're just like,
exactly.
So, do you have any? Have you had any issues with your hands, or are you try to stay relaxed, or like how are you?
Well, recently, actually, like 5 days ago, I had in my right hand, like it seemed like my thumb was just getting a little bit jammed, or like it was really tight. Like the muscle right there is, and it's something I never really thought of before, but I need to just start, you know, massaging my hands out and everything. So that's the first sign of it.
That's the first sign of getting old right there, man. You gotta hang it up.
Yeah,
especially with like acoustic and like it's only the easy shit. Like if you're playing a lot of, because I play a lot with like accompany artists, and they're always, they're singer songwriters. Everything's in A flat or fucking G flat, and they don't even know because they just use capos. But I'm
holding those bar chords, man.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, like fuck. But yeah, stretching.
Stuff, man. Yeah, man, it's something I need to do a bit more diligently.
It just helps. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's always something, man. It can never just be easy.
No, I know. It's so frustrating. But I mean, I have one of these guys, which is good, just to roll out everything, and that helps. But it was quite a shock. Everything jam up like that.
That's a drag, man. I had, when I was in college, I had tendonitis, and it was like,
oh damn.
Yeah, and I had been practicing that much. You know, I was a chronic shedder, you know. I was practicing between like 4 and 8 hours every day. And I think with like being in, I went to Manhattan School of Music in New York, and it was, I just, my hands got so fucked up just because I was trying. I think it was just the stress of it, you know? When I realized I kind of reinvented my technique, and then I was fine for the rest of my life. But I mean, you know, it was such a drag, man, because it's like, anyway, I don't want to say it because, like, you know, I don't want to like jinx you.
No, I'm going to be a lot more careful now. It's when I play the gypsy jazz guitar, I think that really shocks my body a little bit. If I'm used to just doing electric, and then one day I decide, I want to record a video on gypsy jazz.
Right. Yep.
And then it just throws, it kind of throws back out a little bit as well, right. annoyingly.
Yep. It's like some Alexander technique thing, you know, you like your posture.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a heavy instrument to play.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are used to from playing it from a young age, but mm-hmm. It's definitely very different to electric in that sense, the physicality.
So in this stage of, you know, your career, you said you weren't going to go and like study or anything like that, but would you, at this point, are you just like looking to hone what you have and try to find your own voice, or would you like to study with anyone? And if so, who would it be?
Oh, true, man. Yeah. Well, I like studying with a lot of different people for sure, which I had the experience of doing at Con, which I don't do enough of. I think that's something that definitely want to start getting into, you know, like little one-off lessons with people like every month or something. It's such a good way to just keep yourself focused and
get a new perspective. Well,
and you have a lot to offer other instructors and other masters, because that's what makes them masters in the first place, is they can, it's always like a learn and teach. So I think, you know, getting out there like that would be awesome.
Them,
you know,
exactly. It's like, that's why I say it. I mean, music is constant, you know. I mean, everyone, and I'm talking about not that you're 25 or, you know, that I'm older than that. I'm 92, but no. But that all of my friends like still vigorously practice and study, and they're at the highest level, and they're never, you know, they're saying, oh, I want to learn some Brazilian guitar. Like, I want to study with Chico, or like, I'm going to study with Homero Lobombo or someone else, or you want to learn how to do this. Like, there's, once that fire goes out, not that you have to study with people, but once you stop wanting to learn, I think that's over, right? Music is an endless pursuit. It's beautiful.
It is, man. Yeah, it is endless. There's no real kind of end goal.
No.
And you can always learn stuff, which is awesome. Yeah, definitely. So I think, that's stuff that I want to be doing for sure. And then my main focus is getting some kind of music out. So either an album or an EP or something. So by this year, I definitely want something out. Hopefully with my band. And
You have like no limits to composition wise. It's like we had Rez Abbasi on yesterday, and he was just talking about how his albums are they're all so different. And like I think with like Nir Felder too, like with Nir, it's like I can put his records on with kids that are like hippie friends that listen to jam music, and they're like, "What is this? Yeah. This is super cool!"
Right.
And I'm like, "This cat's fucking, you know, like, he can do a lot of stuff." But so I feel like you're kind of in that vibe, because just from that interview I watched, you kind of mentioned something of like you want to have just different stuff, like not be in one corner of music. You know,
well, Gila does that too. You know, I mean, there's some cats that are in the straight ahead camp, and, you know, and they, and then there's some people that do different things, and there's no right answer.
No, it's just whatever you want to do.
So what does this new group sound like? The one, so you have keyboard, playing bass, like what would you describe it as if you had to? Which is hard to do.
Yeah, for sure. I'll like try and do it with genre terms first. Like,
colors. No, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very blue.
Yeah, exactly.
definitely jazz based, as far as like there'll be improvisation and stuff, and compositions are pretty, you know, informed by all that. But I do really like a lot of different music, and a lot of metal, and a lot of hip hop as well. So I definitely want to like throw in a lot of those elements, even like kind of using sampling stuff.
Yeah, man.
Similar Robert Glasper kind of vibe as well.
Totally.
And distortions.
Like you'll and a bit of distortion too.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm happy.
I guess, one other name as far as like big inspiration probably for the sound would be like Tigran stuff. Because I think he's combining like a lot of different elements.
Totally, man.
Jazz, metal, kind of folky stuff as well.
Where did I see
it's incredible.
I think Vienne, France.
Right. Jazz at Vienne. Beautiful.
I think I saw him that night.
Beautiful. that one bit. Was he playing solo?
No. And I was on the road as a technician. that whole time.
He was he was working for Matheny at that time. Setting up Chris Potter sax too, right? You did all that stuff.
Damn, that's cool.
Potter and Ben.
Did
Williams
you and Tony yeah? Hill. Did you come out to Sydney in like 2014?
No, I never did their Australia stuff. Okay. I went to Australia as a musician with another artist, but we only did Melbourne. Okay. But yeah, I think my friend was on that tour with Pat.
Yeah, because I saw them
Japan and Australia and all that stuff.
I saw them then and that lineup. So
yeah,
probably I'd say still the best gig I've ever seen. That one.
Yeah. Did they have the some of that orchestrion too?
It sure did. Yeah. Yep. Sick.
So cool. That's what made it would have been so much easier if I had picked the tour that they didn't have that, because that was a 17-hour day. It's just a jazz quartet. Imagine. But then they added that shit and it was like,
and then you just have to set that shit up every time. Yeah,
there goes my day, Jesus.
Yeah, I was watching those videos the other day, actually, 2 days ago or something, the orchestrion stuff. But he must have a warehouse where it keeps it all, right?
Oh yeah. New York.
Yeah.
But really, outside of New York. He's in Kingston.
Cool. Yeah,
right. And it's funny because he's got all his guitar cases there. So it's a warehouse guitar cases. And then David's got all his gear, because David Oakes and Carolyn, they've been with him forever. They've been road dogging with that cat for almost 40 years. It's a tight crew. And I'm tight with them personally, so I was just I'll go on the road with you guys for for a year. It was awesome.
Yeah, that seems fun.
Matheny's another one of those guys that just came out and knew what his sound was going to be. If you listen to Bright Side's Life, it's like, that's Pat, Jaco, obviously, and Bob Moses, right? And we were speaking, we did a masterclass with Bob Moses while back, and he was telling us a story about, he said that the record company didn't want Jaco because he was an unknown. So they wanted to get Charlie Hayden, I think, right? Wasn't it Charlie Hayden? It was
probably either, not a bad option.
No, he's great, but they just wanted upright, and he's an amazing player. But Bob actually went to the record company. He was no, this guy is going to make it. It's going to feel different. And Charlie Hayden is obviously a master and amazing. But he said, if you don't get Jaco to do it, I'm not going to do the record. And so they hired him.
Yeah, damn.
But it's such a cool pairing. It just makes sense,
Yeah, for sure.
I'm also a bass player, but that fucking record's great.
That's so good. That's so good. Yeah, definitely one of those. And then they did all the Joni stuff too.
Together, right?
So badass.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
She's so special. Man.
And those mixes are crazy. So special. Because all bass. It's really.
Yeah. It's true. That live gig, is that the one you mean? Yeah.
And I remember them telling me, Pat specifically, as soon as the show would end, Joni would just run away and just get in the limo and get the fuck out of there. She was not having fame, I think performance wise, and Pat's kind of like that too, he's he doesn't eat. We would be giving him chocolate, you got to have something, dude. After the show. Cause that's the thing with musicians, we're nervous wrecks, Pat is Pat and he knows he's Pat, but he's still very nervous about his playing. You know what I mean? He's fucking like all of us. It's crazy.
Yeah.
goes away. And it's kind of healthy in a way,
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it really means you still care about.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be surprised, and I won't even name names, but there's many of, and it's a guitar thing too, a lot of times, but I don't know why, but,
cause we're cool.
A lot of the guitarists, not a lot, I'm not going to say, but there's plenty of A-list guitarists we have on the site that you know very well that we're basically I can't listen. I give them the masterclass cut after we make it. And I'm like, all right, you check it out. Let me know if you want to cut anything. And they're just like, I can't wash myself,
watch it.
Yeah, just I trust you, it's good, just put it on.
Make me look.
yeah I'm kind of,
I'm like, dude, like you sound amazing, man. They're like yeah, I'll take your word for it, bro.
Whatever you say. I'm all good. I'm definitely a bit like that with playing, but definitely like that with speaking and stuff, because Yeah, that stuff I don't really watch back.
Would you ever? So you would never want to like write tunes where you're singing or anything?
No, man, like, no.
Instrumental thing.
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe like for other people to sing. I do like enjoy kind of a bit of production stuff as well. You know, getting
that's cool.
singers in, but
that's awesome though.
Collaborating with singers. I really enjoy doing that, but I could never. I don't think.
I mean, you've heard what can happen. Look at Joni's music. So
yeah,
the sky's the limit. That stuff can always be fused together.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
So in terms of your music going forward and recording this record, how do you plan on getting it out there just in the same ways you've been doing via social media, or do you have other ideas?
I'd say so, man. Yeah, social media. I haven't thought too much about what the trajectory of like releasing something looks like, because I'm still focusing kind of on the whole recording side of it.
Just make sure you film the session at least,
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, I would love
for
like a record to come out the same way that like I found Kimbra. Cause I remember that live fucking session that she did with Settle Down. I was just like, fuck. And then she moved out here and I was super excited and I'd see her out all the time.
Yeah.
And then she left super depressed.
I mean, even if you just have to mount a few GoPros, it'll be better. Exactly. Like that's what Mike Moreno does for his live stream, and they look nice. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I've got like a little Canon mirrorless thing, which that's what I use for all my videos at the moment, with a good lens. And
yeah, Jake has got way too much camera gear over there. He's just like pissed off. How many lenses do you have?
I have my saturation down like 20% with this webcam for some
reason,
just because it looks cool.
it does. I only have two lenses, so I haven't quite caught the addiction yet, but
you will.
It's obnoxious. We all have too much. So
just more and more gear.
Like in terms of your social media, you don't seem like a chronic poster, but you post enough, right? That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that was going back to kind of the question of what I was doing in quarantine. And when everything went down, I just got back from NAMM.
Oh yeah,
it would have been NAMM 2020, which was awesome, and that was my first time in the States as well, and kind of being around that whole scene. And I mean, NAMM is such a hang, I reckon.
It is.
You just see all those people.
Bonkers, yeah.
It's such a cool hang. So after that, I was like, let's really try and get this social media thing going a bit. So it just opens all these doors as far as when I go next year or the following year, I have so many more connections that, and so many more people I can hang with and have kind of contact with.
Yeah, man.
And then quarantine happened, and I was like, well, here's my chance. I got nothing else going on. So I really dedicated all my time to just trying to post as much as I could and get my stuff out there, and as well as writing. And, I'd write little etudes or transcribe stuff I'd been wanting to transcribe in a long time, and kind of set myself little time frames for them and try and do as much as possible. And that was all my practice, really. It was just all that kind of related and funneled in through that. And I think I did have, it's been pretty amazing that the people you can connect with through Instagram and YouTube.
And it's important now too. It's like a lot of, I've said this like a bunch of times, but when I first started, in order to get deals, like endorsements, it was all about TV. I mean, at first it was like touring, and then it was just TV. It was like, you have to be on like The Late Show or this and this. You have to be seen, like not just on gigs. And then now it's very much about being an influencer on social media.
Well, you're the curator of your own TV program in a way, or something like that.
Yeah. So if you're playing like a certain kind of guitar or a certain this, then it's important for people to see. And even the camera companies like GoPro or Canon, or their deals are all based on like metrics, so it's really about like what can you do for them, which it makes sense. It's a business arrangement, and how
and then
how
collaborations too.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
I'd love for you to. You gotta. I don't know if you know Lil Bad Snacks.
Yes, she's
my friend Jessie.
She's so cool. Yeah,
she started. She started. I've known her forever, and like she started as singer songwriter, violinist.
Yeah,
like I remember coming up on the East Coast. She was like doing like the ridiculous like kids orchestra in fucking Boston when she was like 11 or some bullshit. She's always been a badass, but it was weird when she moved out to LA, and then that all happened, and now she's in Portland and stuff. But yeah, like it'd be cool, like. You've run into stuff like that. Like she would run into a badass bass player and they'd do something together and then it's super fucking cool. Like that's, to me, like that's so fun.
Yeah.
That's what I love about social media. Like all the
content. Or Lewis Cole. Like Lewis is, he's, you know, he does all that, those cool things with other people. And that's he ended up, did you see the one he did with Bob Mincer? It was so cool. Like Bob did this big band. Yeah, it was Bob's big band with like Lewis Cole, and it was so cool. Awesome. It was one of Lewis's tunes that was arranged by Bob, and it's like that's when it comes together, you know.
Yeah.
And you might, and maybe, I mean, I just kind of drew the connection now, but maybe you're seeing a lot of that, like more of the collaboration stuff, like online and on people's albums these days too.
Yeah.
Like I know bands like Polyphia, do you know those guys?
I don't know.
They're kind of more in the metal realm.
It's a cool name, Polyphia.
It's a sick name, yeah.
Because it's kind of like polyphonic, maybe, is sort of what they're saying.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Anyway, like their last album, they had, you know, features from like all the cop guys that post regularly on Instagram, like just all the incredible musicians that they contacted probably through Insta. And, that's awesome. It just led to like incredible collaborations. And that's awesome. You know, they probably didn't even have to meet, like they could just record separately and
because we're all gearheads, we all have shit.
We know how to
get it done.
You have an interface, like, you know, all you need is like a decent mic and an interface.
Yeah, you're rocking what, Universal Audio is what you said in the beginning.
Exactly, yeah.
What kind of mic do you use? Just a 57?
Oh man, I think it's just an SM57.
Yeah. Henderson uses. Like,
I was going to say, Scott would be proud. Make sure it's a new one, though. Only new mic that he gets. He'll get a brand new 57 like every couple years.
Every time, yeah.
Yeah, like it's the one thing he doesn't want vintage.
Yeah. And I mean, the programs and companies like Neural DSP, have you checked out those guys? And their plugins are pretty incredible. I'll use them often as well. I don't have to deal with any app noise. And if it's just some background bits or even like lead tones, I find they're pretty awesome for all that stuff.
Man, we've been, you know, it's been great to talk to you and, you know, get to know a little about you. And I'm hoping that, you know, everyone enjoyed this and got to know you a little more. And if you haven't checked out Josh, man, he's a super badass and he's young and he's scary talented, man. And I'm, you know, excited to see what you do, you know, once this restrictions end and once your music comes out, because, you know, I'm curious, you know, and to see what it sounds like. And I think that a lot of people will be, you know?
Yeah. Thanks so much. And thanks heaps for having me. It was fun.
Don't be afraid to hit us up either if you're in either of the big cities.
Oh, well,
you run into some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Run away from the cops or something. We'll hide you away.
We won't let you get deported. Don't worry.
Play too many licks.
Exactly.
Get busted.
Send them back.
Play too many notes. Get them out of here.
Nah, there's a lot. There's a ton of notes around here. There's no note police.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, man, thanks so much, and you know, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.